The reports have been circulated for the department as well as the entities in some time last week. And I guess members have familiarized themselves with the reports. What I had said was that we are not going to receive all presentations. We actually just received one presentation by the department, and then members will be free to ask any questions. We can't get presentations from everyone, otherwise we're not going to finish the room. So, but members are so free to ask any question to any of the entities. The CEOs are on. Yes, ma'am. It's colorful. You want me to give them how many minutes?
I think what you should ask them is how many minutes you need, and then we all.
We ask them how many they need, and then we have them. Gigi, how many minutes do you need?
Six. Half to 15. The presentation. 20 minutes.
Granted. Your 20 minutes starts now.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, colleagues, and industry players. We are here to present, and our presentation will be led by the Chief Director, Strategic Planning, Fahad Osman, and followed by the CFO, who is going to deal with financial matters, and the entire team will then take questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. As the teacher mentioned, I'll just run through the presentation. Considering the type of content in the presentation, perhaps we can focus more on the summary by slides, which will cover the rest. In terms of the performance overview, what we've done is we've sort of consolidated the performance over the 3 quarters, so it's year-to-date up until 31 December, end of quarter three. So for the financial year 2018-19, in the annual performance plan, the department committed to achieving 24 APP targets. These targets are spread across the 5 programs, budget programs, and the 6 branches of the department. So in line with the quarterly target set for the quarter 1, 2, 3 against these 24 APP targets, 21 of these targets are achieved as of 31 December. They were audited and confirmed as achieved. And while 3 of these targets are not achieved, that gives us 88% of achievement, while 12% of the 3 targets which have not been achieved increased to 12%. Basically, the next 3 slides summarize the key achievements that make up that 88%. So in the next 3 slides, we'll basically be covering the bulk of the content because it covers 88% of the targets, the 21 targets. And then this just highlights the significant achievements, not all of them. The first one deals with the program and project management training or capacitating of SMS members. It was identified that in order to push forward the department's initiatives and targets, we need to further focus on capacity and staff in terms of project and program and project management. So an audit was done, it was identified that we should target 80% of identified SMS members, that equates to 50 senior managers. That directed upwards. And of that, although the target was 80%, by the end of quarter three, we actually exceeded that. We achieved 83%. That increased the 50 members that were trained. And in terms of the climate and culture survey, so the next one is the climate and culture survey. It basically is stemmed from the survey that was taken in the 2016-17 financial year, and then we started implementing an action plan to address the climate and culture of the organization from 2017-18. The focus for 2018-19 of the current financial year is on around leadership, because it was one of the focus areas that was identified. And then the leadership development program was developed together with the business school and targeted the executives, which is UDG and DDGs. As of 31 December, the program had comments with us and the DDGs and the teachers been attending and have been assigned mentors and so forth. And then it will be concluded as per the leadership development program in quarter four, so that's on track. We actually started the process of digitizing the department, moving towards the paperless department, and that started in actually in 2017-18. Where we automated the lead process and so forth. And then in the current financial year, we actually targeted the e-submission process, which is basically all the memos and submissions that are routed up from the department up to the minister. That's been automated and it's been digitized, and it's been rolled out at the 31 December. So that we'll continue identifying additional processes towards a paperless department. On the international front, quite familiar with the hosting of the BRICS ICT Ministerial Meeting 2018 that took place in Delft, that was successfully hosted, and there was quite a significant outcome of that meeting that we're still taking forward even into the next financial year. The same applies in the next slide for the hosting of the IG Telecom World 2018, which also saw several outcomes and initiatives that have spun off, and we are moving forward with them, and you'll also find them in the 2019-20 EPPSC plan. So with international, we focused on developing a SADC position for a country position on SADC roaming, which is finalized, approved, and was presented at two forums, the SADC ESCOM as well as the SADC ministerial meeting. Well, in terms of IQ, the IQ Telecom 2018 was held in October, November in 2018. And the position was developed, which was also endorsed by Cabinet in August 2018, and this was advanced at the IHB Benefit, and it was quite a successful event considering that we were able to advance 9 proposals that were tabled at the Benefit. In terms of our legislative program on the ICT legislation, the bills that we took through to Trust and Cabinet by 31 December was the ETA bill, the Postal Service Amendment bill, and the INAC bill. Just we went through the processes and it's still in the pipeline and according to the plan. In terms of our SMME focus, following the approval of the IT SME development strategy in the past financial year, we are still continuing with this implementation, and the focus has been on training of ISPs and incubation of them, and this is being done with strategic partners such as the MISA, the Bali University, the DGNA, and Google. There's extensive initiatives that are being undertaken in this program. We move on in terms of the strategies that we are still we are focusing on implementing, and that is a longer term focus. This focus on 2018-19 current financial is largely on the development of the National Digital Skills Strategy. And as I said, on December we had concluded the stakeholder consultation on the digital skills gap analysis report, so basic an identification of the existing skill gap in light of the required skills focused on the digital transformation and the financial revolution and the like, and that will inform the development and finalization of this digital skills strategy, which will then be taken to Cabinet for approval in the next financial year. On the issue of specialization of state-owned companies, which we also started in the previous financial year, the focus was on drafting the business cases in this financial year, and that has been concluded for both the state IT infrastructure company and the state IT company, which was concluded. It was consulted with the other stakeholders, also submitted to Minister, and basically this will then further inform the drafting of further legislation going forward. In terms of SA Connect, there has been some traction here considering the previous challenges we've been having. And that's largely due to bring on board the likes of DBI and CETA. And in terms of 31 December, in terms of SA Connect, we're able to project manage substance of 63 of the identified sites. And then infrastructure has also been installed on 313 sites. That's the Viva initiative, while the internet services on the CITES side have activated in 93 sites. That's 31 December. On the issue of fast-tracking deployment IT infrastructure, the WPRO National Coordination Center was established in November and has already commenced this operation. And as we go forward, it's going to get further traction and will broaden its scope of services. In terms of preparation for WRC19, that's focused on the longer term, the next financial year, towards reviewing the National Radio Frequency Plan based on the outcomes of WRC19 that will be taking place later in this calendar year. We've continued with preparation in that regard. We further updated the further updated our contributions report based on outcomes of meetings of working parties and also contributing to the development of the draft RSA preliminary position for the WRC19. So that position is to be finalized by quarter one of the next financial year to cabinet approval and then subsequent advancement after actual WRC19. In terms of the next slide, it covers areas of underachievement. So that basically summarizes the three targets that we did not achieve. The first one is in relation to the identification and consideration of strategic risks during the strategic planning workshop this fall. The risks were actually identified, but due to a change in the workshop program or the process, we actually didn't undertake the actual consideration of the risks at the workshop itself. But we'll just get into a little more detail on these areas in the subsequent slide. And the next one that we did not achieve is in regards to the Presidential Commission on the Fourth Industrial Revolution. The thinking was that by 31 December, we should have already had the commission established and we should have started provision of secretariat and technical support to the commission as it already should have been operationalized. But due to initial delays in the establishment of the commission, we didn't reach the stage of providing secretariat and technical support. And the last one that we fell short on as of 31 December, we should have by then finalized the project feasibility study that's focused on the funding application for phase two of broadband connectivity, which must be then applied for in the next financial year. But due to required compliance processes that took longer than anticipated, we weren't able to finalize the project feasibility study. If I can then go through the slides, but instead of focusing on the greens, which have been summarized in the initial slide, we could just go down to the red. The first red, the one being the risk-related matter that I spoke about. That relates to, as I mentioned, the change in the workshop program, but the current progress today, if you look at the last part, the risk management unit has already started engaging with branches to consider the identified risk. Albeit the consideration should have been done at the planning workshop in terms of trying to catch up with it. The branches are meeting and considering the risks and cleaning them up and further confirming the strategic risks which are aligned to the upcoming strategic, the annual performance plan for the upcoming financial year. So basically, in a nutshell, this target will be achieved. The quarter four target will be caught up, the quarter three target, and the annual target will be achieved in totality by end of the financial year. The annual target referring to this risk assessment and the updating of the risk register, which is also being conducted simultaneously in these engagements with the branches. And the second target that was read relates to the commission, the presidential commission. I'm just trying to find it. As I mentioned, the secretariat support should have been provided because it was planned for the commission to be established, but due to the delay, it was not provided. However, there's substantial progress being made in this regard in terms of the fact that the shortlisting of the appointment of members for the commission has been prioritized. In December, it was at the time of nomination. Applications were received, and the shortlisting and the nomination is being finalized and will be prioritized, so that the commission can be operationalized and be provided the necessary support as planned. So there is some traction there, and we should be able to make up a lot of the lost ground in that regard. On the last one, with regards to the funding application, this was actually with regards to the service provider, the development bank of South Africa, that running with the pre-feasibility study. There were some challenges from their regard in terms of issues and of compliance process that needed to be undertaken, and therefore it was a bit not in full control of the department. But they have, we are constantly engaging with the service providers to prioritize the finalization of the pre-feasibility study so as to catch up a lot of time, and there is some hope in there. But I think we can confirm that especially the issues of the commission and the definitely risk related challenges are being resolved. So going forward, by end of the financial year, the 88% should actually look better by the 1st of March. And if we continue with the financials, can you check?
Thank you, Chair. Just one more. Also, I'd like to clarify that is the basement that we've been given for 2018 financial year, and the total budget that we've been given was 923 million, and the COE was 224 million. And the reduction is because of indicated. Then we move to slide number 26. During the adjustment budget change, from the 923 million that we have received, we received the approval for the broadband project, which was 110 million, and also received the 2.9 billion for the supporting capitalization, and also the IT sponsorship that was received in cash. We received them only during the adjustment budget. So that shows up our budget to 4 billion. So in terms of the sponsorship that paid in cash, we have MTN who received 25 million, Microsoft 1 million, and IDC 250,000. And then on slide 27, Chair, expenditure per program. Administration, as at end of the third quarter, the total spending for the department entities was 18%, and it's mainly because of the 2.9 billion that we have received during the adjustment budget, because it was required that we need to transfer it in January. So by end of December, that money was still sitting in the SOC oversight, which is program 4, and you will see that the percentage is 6%. And under administration, the spending was still 60%, which were underspending due to invoices from public works that we did not receive on time. However, I can confirm that all these invoices were received in January. And then international affairs is sitting at 95%. I must confirm that all the membership fees were paid during the first quarter, and we also had a saving of 1.3 million, of which during the adjustment budget we requested that we must move to the goods and services so that it can be utilized for other items. And then, however, we are monitoring this program very closely due to the IT. We had to move a lot of funds due to all the funds, the sponsorship that was received in cash. We could not utilize the money, because the money needed to be moved to treasury first, and we could only receive it after the adjustment budget. And then, spoken about quality and research and capacity is sitting at 65% due to other projects that are done internally, and in SOE oversight is sitting at 6% due to the 2.9 billion that we have not transferred by the end of December. Then infrastructure support sitting at 63%. I must say, Chair, that the invoices relating to the A-Connect project were only received in January from BBI and ETA. So in the fourth quarter, we will see the spending, the spending on this project, which will improve the figure. And the total spending that we completed. And then when you look at expenditure per economic classification, the COE is sitting at 74%. Mainly interest on par, and the salary adjustments were expected in the second quarter. Due to the moratorium that we received, we not required to seal any posts, we did indicate that we will be having a saving on the COE by the end of the financial year. With the services, sitting at 38%, mainly because of the SA Connect project at this stage, we did not see the SA Connect process yet. However, in the fourth quarter, we'll see that. And I must say that the cost drivers under the goods and services was mainly the subsidies and travel, and also the accommodation due to the IT. Events that are held by the department. And then transfers and subsidies, sitting at 85%, the detail will come later. And then payment of financial assets, their recapitalization, 2.9 billion, was transferred in January. And yes, and payment for capital assets is sitting at 27%. And then when you look at the transfers check, two municipalities, 67%, this is mainly the renewal of licenses and all that. And then to Nemisa, we have transferred 35% at the end of December. To USATA, 36%. To Center for Dual Illumination, 100%. And then to USAF, 36%. And to USAF for BDM projects, 50%. And to international organizations, all that was paid in the third quarter. And I must say that these transfers checks are made according to the agreed schedule with National Trade at the beginning of the financial year. Then, Chair, we move to slide number 81, when you look at the audit action plan. Okay, the number of findings there for 2018 is about 28 findings. And I must say, Chair, we did give an amended report on slide 34 because the committee that was appointed, the internal control committee, met after the presentation of supplementals. So, but we do give the update where the committee is tasked to look at the root cause of the findings, and we also look at the findings that are duplicated so that we reduce the number of findings, and we look also at the progress, how are we addressing those findings that we have. Okay? I'll move on to slide number 34, which is the last slide. Chair, on the amended document, 83% of the findings have been addressed, and 18% has been in progress, and we have moved in terms of those findings that were not moving. We have moved a great deal here. If I can just spend time on the findings that are still in progress. On the expenditure management, under expenditure management, there was a finding on the capturing that was done that was incorrect, and this official is due to go to for training, and we are waiting treasurer to give us the date of that training. Then on the irregular expenditure, the regular expenditure is being investigated. We have compiled the report at least to go to the DG to condone or refer to the relevant authority for condonement and also take necessary action. And then under HR management on the organogram, that relates to the posts that were not filled, and some of the posts are still not filled, and that's after 12 months of those posts being vacant. Then on the assessment, there was a finding that supervisors do not submit the action plan, especially on the officials who are performing poorly. Then the report is due to be presented in the next CEC. And then on the performance information management, on the user access control, this is the performance system, where it was not configured, and the unit together with IT, they are busy addressing that finding. And then on the internal control policies, these are the policies where the AG found that some of the policies were not reviewed. We do have an OPSCOM in the department, and that looks at the policies and we review on a monthly basis. So some of the policies are continuous, and that's why we left it at the LOD. And then IT technology, there's just one finding that is, I think, in progress to be addressed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairman. So, Chairman, that's here the story, and I think of the great importance is what it was presented last in terms of the guidance we received from the Commission in terms of dealing with the historical challenges that we're faced with. And as you can see, we're very significant time in fact in every area. Even where you see the yellow 18%, we know what is happening in each one of them, and there is a process that relates to the work that we're doing. So we'll be ready to take questions.
Before, Madam Chin, wait a bit, I will give you an opportunity. Yes. What I wanted to do is to check from the CEOs that are present whether there are issues that we may want to take note of. Just briefly, 2-3 minutes, that they think it's important that we should be brought to our attention. If you don't, I'm going to probe you, I'm going to pick you up. So I just want to see all you want to volunteer at certain things too. That's not a bad idea. The two CEOs sitting on the same table would like to know. Okay, you know the talk. Please take no less than more, I mean not more than 2 minutes.
Okay.
Oh, you want 5? Okay, you are granted 4.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to all of my members and colleagues. With respect to your start, and USAP. I'd like to just bring your attention in regards to USAP that with the cabinet decision in October last year regarding the PDM project that is moving away from the procurement of petrol companies and going the route of voucher, it meant we needed to amend our APP. And so that we could not conclude with the department and that will negatively affect our APT because that accounts for 35% of our APT. Mm-hmm. So that's the measure I would like to bring to your attention. The second one, also in respect to this sound, is that for almost 6 months, we did not conclude on the charting for the rollout of the broadband connectivity project. And we only picked up in the third quarter, and that process is unfolding now. And that may mean also in terms of broadband connectivity targets, we will not be able to achieve the 100% plan in terms of broadband. Those two areas are one in respect of Utah. But Mr. Zamba, I'm sure you can see that we have picked up after our turnaround strategy and accelerated performance and improved from quarter three from quarter two to quarter three. And we're hoping that even the areas where we could not achieve in quarter three already
absorbed
them, so we're hoping for that form that will be fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other? Sir, you
want to come in?
Or you're fine?
Sure, but I'm coming, you're sitting here drawing, so I might as well have a go. Sure, thank you for the opportunity for the morning and honourable members. Perhaps just highlight a couple of things. First one is that the SASA project is now in full swing. And despite monthly challenges, we've got a lot of challenges about fraud and cash safety and issues of that nature which we almost manage on a daily basis. But other than that, the project is working. What it does do though, if you go through the numbers, it makes them quite complex to understand because we're at an early stage of the SASA project where we're incurring all of the expenses, although the income's starting to flow in. Like for example, you know, what we spend on cards and so on, which is really a stock item, not an income statement item. Mm-hmm. So the results will be skewed now by upfront expenses in SASA, which are not going to recur. And to look at the post office group now, you really have to take a longer term view and to allow the SASA project economics to mature. But nonetheless, we're ahead of where we anticipated. Just to reiterate, we have received the funding. It's quite fun to watch 2.947 billion go through your bank statement, dwarfs the other numbers. But that has been applied really to pay all loans, we pay the bridging finance to the banks plus the interim 400 million overdraft that we had. We set on about 744 million supplies and we have some cash for the first time available for real capital project investment together with funds that are made available to us by the Department of Social Development. We've also, I think, crossed the line on the allocation over the next 3 years for the public service mandate. There's been a significant increase in the performance against our various strategic themes. We're over 3/4 removed from roughly 30% to 70% achievement. So we like that and restrict it. You can see a rather disastrous picture on terms of the backlog, which we all know about, was well written about. And we found ourselves in a position where during quarter two we really got quite far behind, and that's been well analysed internally and in the media. Just to say that we are now just short of 80% in terms of delivery. So we went from 83 to 56 to 64, we're back now at 76% as of our latest figures. The challenges still remain are primarily on the international side. I was at the Sotaro conference yesterday speaking to various of the players in SADC and also to the Deputy Director General of the UPU. And there are some quite serious challenges facing all post offices around the world with a huge increase in e-commerce related package flows, which even the best countries in the world have not been prepared for. And also for the stance that the USA is taking to withdraw from the UPU, which I can discuss with by with anyone who wishes to talk about it. I must say we've completed the executive review. at the top level of the organization. And so there's been quite a significant change of the top executives and also a significant move to decentralized management. And so a lot of our management is now taking place at regional level or at operational level, at SCM, at the nerve centers, wherever. And that was part of the reason why one of our KPIs was so far behind in the second quarter, well, in the first and third quarter, which was the performance management. We apologize for that. We have achieved 100% of the performance management update now. Chair, one of the things that's still not in the numbers, which is still to-do item, but a complex one, was the staff optimization expenses, which were part of the discussions with the unions in terms of the increase that we finally granted. And that's a challenge. I met and signed off on the audit plan 2 to 3 days ago, possibly. We seem to be way better than we have been preparing for the audit. If I look at the 18 findings, the status of that, I think you should bear in mind that 17 of the unresolved audit findings relate to CFG, which is just a compliance matter of wrapping that company up, which is dormant. So that just has to be done. Chair, those are the points I wish to highlight. Thank you for your opportunity.
Thank you. Okay, you are the floor, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I just want to highlight one. Earlier, our APP, which is being challenged currently, and I think it will remain challenged until the end of the financial year, which is our revenue target. We missed in quarter 3, and our projection for quarter 4 is that we'll be close to achieving it. But the challenge that has come lately is that because of dualism, because of the digital migration delay, some of our customers are deciding to switch off analog, and thus reducing revenue that is due to us because they've switched off analog. Why they are not paying the digital revenue, because there's not been any migration to digital. So that APP, I think we're keeping on a watch and trying to do whatever is possible to achieve the goal of revenue target. But other APPs, we're confident that we will be able to make that. Thank you, sir.
Sir.
Thank you, Chair. From the Interco point of view, just the highlight for us is firstly the delivery on SA Connect that has already been reported by the department, secondly that the our revenue figures, although they are going to be below the budget, but there is a significant increase that we are forecasting, or what we've achieved up to quarter 3 in our forecast compared to the previous 2 financial years. Our revenue will be about 400 million, about 420 our forecast at the end of the financial year, which indicates the strategy that we've had in place of focusing on sales. Sales effort is beginning to yield the required results in terms of our turnaround. Then the other issue that I would like to highlight is the issue of irregular expenditure, so that it is understood in the right context. We, as part of our program, use the infrastructure of ESCOM and Transnet. And due to challenges in those organizations, the agreement that we had for using the fiber and the facilities of those two entities had expired and took a long time to renew, new agreement with ESCO mentioned here. But in terms of national treasury classification, if you carry on using the service after the contract has expired, that is classified even in the expenditure. So when one looks at our year in the expenditure, don't be alarmed. It's something that was incurred in the regular course of our business. It's just the manner that it's classified because the agreement has expired. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess I don't see any support.
Honourable chairman, members, may I just on behalf of the MISA focus on two matters, and the one relates to the footprint of the MISA. As you know, for some time we only had 7 collabs operating, and during this current financial year, the idea was to expand to further 2 collabs. That has been done. Those agreements have been signed, and we are seeing that the local people are building up speed towards delivering on targets in the next year, the next financial year. And those are then in Mpumalanga and in the Free State. There was a further collab that was not fully operating yet at Gauteng, from Tshwane University of Technology, and we have also engaged there extensively, and we believe that will also be coming on. Then secondly, the other thing, Chairperson, if I might just mention, is that we were working on 1-year MOAs until now. That led to some uncertainty always about what programs can be undertaken, etc. A decision was taken to move to 3-year MOAs, memorandum of agreement, and we are in the process of finalizing those for the next 3-year period, but finalized before the end and signed before the end of this financial year, so that the work can start immediately in the new financial year. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Colleagues,
thank you, Chairperson. On slide 5, we talk about the Rapid Deployment National Coordinating Centre. Surely now that the bill has been withdrawn, that has no legal mandate to exist. Can you please explain why it exists and what you have about the plan and what legal mandate that you have for that? Then on slide 6, we talk about funding for phase 2 of SA Connect. That's with the Development Bank of South Africa looking to finance it. Can you please explain the difficulties that they have been coming up with the figures and finalized, or has it been finalized on what SA's phase 2 is going to cost? And then also just regarding to SA Connect, I would think that National Treasury has some challenges in funding SA Connect, and this aligns to the USARTA presentation, where an awful lot of the installations that have been made are non-functional or having problems. The number of there is actually quite amazing as to how much is not working. And one assumes that the people who installed those sites are not being paid until the things are up and running. To me, that looked quite telling. So I just wondering if National Treasury has challenges with the payment of phase 1 of SA Connect before it even goes on to phase 2. Slide 17, we talk about the Industrial Revolution Commission and the shortlisting of members for that. Can you tell us how these members for the commission have been selected? And what the process is, and what is the ratio of government departments to private sector in that commission? We go on to the funding of the ITU conference. I just want to check that none of the budget adjustments that were SA Connect, Synthetic, set-top boxes, none of those reductions went towards financing the ITU shortfall, I hope. These are the adjustments made on slide 45. When this first conference was first mooted last year, I asked the then minister what funding would be required of the department for this. He said that the department would not be financing anything other than the travel and accommodation bills of the ITU delegation. Since then, obviously, there wasn't enough sponsorship to come in, and we have now taken money from the statutory budget of international affairs. And if there was, some donations from ATM, and luckily the PRC didn't put too much money in, but it was the IDC, sorry, not PRC. Microsoft, so you only got cash of 26 million from sponsors. Obviously you've got some donations in kind. But then I would think that the department added, 11.5 million to this? Surely that is an exceptional cost. What is the total cost of the conference? I'm sort of, wondering why we had this conference. This cost the taxpayer so much money when we were promised it would cost us nothing, or virtually nothing. I know we now have a member on the ITU radio, whatever it's called, and I'm sure that he'll do well there. But one thinks that it's an awful hard price to pay for that seat on the conference. And that would be my thank you, Chair.
So there's another question, Kevin?
Another financial statement that there was a
submit claims. And is that some duty we just pay something like this? But I don't see consistency on the two issues. The other one is looking for training and the other one is to be disciplined. And I think failure to submit claims or report is something very very important and very crucial and very serious as well. That it doesn't amount to either negligence or insubordination. I don't think that taking people for training without any consequence will really affect the mental safety. And when you fail to make a correct calculation on your financial statement document to take a certain decision for training, I think in every report, after writing a report, you proofread for the purposes of editing and make sure that the calculations are correct.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to Mr. McKinnon, in terms of the merging of the two departments, going forward, communications and telecommunications, how is this impacting the performance and the morale within the department? And what steps are you taking to address that in terms of managing the clients? And this, I'll ask the same question also to the companies involved in the SSC rationalisation. How is that, for instance, the creation, supposed creation of a state-owned services company, infrastructure company, how is that affecting the morale and the performance and the plans going forward for a company like BDI? Then in terms of ICT training, is there a central eye or an overall coordinator of the various training activities that are taking place in the entities and in the department? For example, Centec is involved in digital skills training, CEET is involved in the skills augmentation program, and then of course we have the MISA's focus on digital skills and e-literacy and training. I'm trying to decide, given all the disparate training needs within the department, is there a central coordinator that could direct this training more effectively and possibly use MISA a bit more since we're stuck with the entity? In terms of the SAPA, Mr. Bond, with the greatest respect, 76% of delivery is not delivery. You know, my son brings home 76%, so why isn't the other 24? Where's that mail? So of 100 customers, 24 customers are not getting their mail. That's a real problem we have as an organization. You're not meeting the delivery standards set by the cost in terms of the life. And I'm sure you're familiar with the My Broadband survey on mail delivery. And let me quote you, because I think it's a horrifying stat. The 2019 test, they mailed four letters from a post office in Centurion on the 25th of January 2019. They said the Roman Empire delivered mail faster than you did. After 11 days, twice the amount of time stipulated in the post office guidelines, none of the four letters would reach their destination. And I think you must have noticed that pattern is repeated across the country, where many people have lost faith in the post office. So that's what are you doing in terms of correcting that? What steps are you taking? I mean, I see you bought new vehicles and that sort of thing. How well can we reach the casters' standards for the post office? Far away. Then your international mail, Mr. Bond, is a real problem. You've got a backlog there of over 900,000 items. And we get calls and mails all the time from people saying, where are my items? I did ask a question in terms of the conveyor belt at the JMC and when that automation would be put in place, because clearly, from where I'm sitting outside of it, automation and automated processing must be the way to go to fix that problem. You've got the money now. You've got an awful lot of money. Can you not use that to automate that process and speed that up? What are your plans in that area? that are closed because of non-payment of rent. And frankly, Mr. Barnes, with that taxpayer funded they are, there should be no post office and no creditors of the post office that haven't been paid. So when are you going to pay those people so we can open those post offices? Because when those landlords shut those post offices, the mail and items that are there that belong to your customers are then stuck behind those locked doors, and they still do, which is not fair on your customers, and it certainly doesn't meet your license conditions.
Focuses on agents to move goods and to
provide service. I think chair, this is the only other entity that I want to just ask about. I mean, I have gone through quite a rough period and then she starts up. Can we now have comfort that the summer is back to normal? That all in the fighting is sort of as the summer of the past, and that they will focus on the full business, that we don't have any problems there.
Training is very, you know, to the performance, the best. just in a
minutes or so tell us as to where you see your entity currently, and in a period of a year or two. Just at a high level, I would say, taking all these metrics into account, this is where I see us being at. With all these problems, and I know I raised some of the problems a few months ago, I think a month or so ago, just for our benefit, as to where, I think by now you know where those problems came from, you should, together with yourselves, and then, I mean, as part of you should have picked up as to where, what actually were the source of it. Non-payment, I mean, the labor of, no, not non-payment, but the fraudulent activities that that some of the recipients were subjected to. And just for the benefit of members, I think a month or so ago, I picked up in my constituency that there were several people who were recipients of grants. I know I intend to hold you to, but there were about more than about 78 or something. Just in one police area. Whose monies were actually withdrawn. Very powerful man who was there. They all were withdrawn in Devon. Somewhere put in Sabo. Salaman to like to write them to Japan. At night, the money was received in the afternoon, around 5 to 6. And then quarter past 10 at night, they were drawn from ATMs, garage ATMs, and so on. This is a very solid data. When you find those elders in their houses, frustrated, I mean, their lives feel, they just feel their lives been cut off. And it happened to me first day to
the
floor.
I'm so thirsty.
I can go on a few questions that you asked from yourselves and now teaching you.
Chairperson, I'll be able to come back with questions and maybe deal with the other stuff that is to the organization of us and other things that you can be mentioned. Now, on the issue of the baby deployment, I think we need to see this baby deployment issue quite differently. That it's not about anyone forcing anyone to do it. But it's more about cooperation. To say that when we deploy electronic communications facilities, it affects so many institutions, not just the department and the chemical. And how best do we work with those institutions? Chair, a case in point is the Department of Water Affairs. We know that there are regulatory issues that are involved there. When, for example, you run out fiber across the river, there are regulatory issues that you can't change the current of water. You know, and we talked to the Department of Water Affairs to find ways of how best we can develop, deploy infrastructure that crosses the rivers. So they will say, okay, just then you are infrastructure in the bridge, on the bridges, so that you don't have to affect the water current. So when you invite them to work, we're not necessarily regulating them, but we're asking for cooperation with them. So this rapid deployment is partnership with local government and other entities can be implemented without any of the parties regulating the other and saying to the other, we have to. But with the question of how best can we create an enabling environment for the rollout of infrastructure, that's the gist of it. So the intention of the participating entity is not to impose anything on others, but work together. Now, so meaning that even in the absence of any regulatory limit, and if we consider that you cannot regulate local government, the department cannot say to local government, you must, you shall. But what the department can do is that we can work together with local government to create an enabling environment for industry to roll out. That is the essence of what we do. Now, with regard to AC for them, we've been implementing phase one based on a particular model. And this model entails essentially the department raising funding and collecting the sites that have been identified. Now, that has serious implications in going forward because it means that those sites that we collect, they keep the money that was supposed to be for ICT services. So we raise money, we collect them from charge, but they keep that money. So what we're trying to do now with National Treasury and the DBSD is to find a sustainable model that does not allow for double dealing. So what they will do, they will give us different options so that when we use the limited money in the fiscal, there are also benefits, but we know that the fiscal is not up to infinity. So we try to find other ways of complementing what the fiscal is going to give in the order of fiscal. Now, this is correct and what Nsansa is doing a separate project, at least for now, because ours is a 10 megabits per second, and theirs is less than that, essentially about Wi-Fi and all those kinds of things. Now, there is a discussion, obviously, on the future of the Nsansa project. But in terms of addressing the specific question as to whether we are paying, we are doing so through BVI, and to the best of our knowledge, based on the recent review, we have been meeting our obligations. So BVI chair and the CEO, party indicator, has been meeting its own obligations and our obligations. We don't give BVI money without the invoice, by the way. So BVI invoices the department and only then we pay. Equally, BVI does not pay the service provider without the invoices. As to the user issues, we from time to time attend to challenges there, in which case we always avail our people if they are needed to assist one way or another, making sure that the project is adequately implemented, even though it is not in an accounting sense our project, but BVI one is our project, and we can vouch for it in terms of where we are. Now, in terms of the 4IR Commission, as the president announced, this is a presidential commission, so they are fully authority in the president, and I think when that happens, the names are revealed, then things will become clear as to who is in and who is not in. We then assume that the commission was going to be established within a particular period. And Chen, you are right to hint that our EPP was structured in such a way that we hope that things were going to happen as initially. Whereas we should have said we will provide secretariat services once the commission is established, something along those lines. But the way it turned out, in a technical way of reading the APP, it was like we will provide this service irrespective of what happens. And that can be very tricky when you go to reporting. But nevertheless, to an extent, yes, we have provided the services everything before the commission was established. Because the advent was issued by us. So we issued the advent, it went out, we received the submissions from the South African to the tune of over 500 people who were nominated either individually or by other organizations. So we did that work. So when it was carried out, it made the debate of what constitutes the target in the agency. But the fact is that the institution called the commission was not there. But work was done towards the establishment of the commission, which entails the current work that we did. Now, on the ITU matter, the question is whether it was necessary to host the ITU Telecom work in Chester. I think that's the starting point. And the view that we get from practical on African countries, those that participated and those that did not participate, the sentiment is that it was a good thing that we did. When it was for the first time that it was hosted in Africa. And if you look at the countries that came to exhibit at IT Telecom, they were mainly African countries. Because for two reasons, where is geography that they could easily reach in South Africa. But the other part was strategic, that African countries saw the opportunity to act well together, showcase what Africa is doing in the exhibitions, but also the program in the discussion allows so many African countries and experts to participate in the discussion. So there was a view in the sense that for the first time, Africa was involved in the development of the program, the agenda, everything, the ACDG policy, I mean, was the main person who was dealing with the program. So, and she learned a lot also in that in process, because we had to do it on our own, such as basic the IT telecom eventually, ever changing things on Africa and so on. So, the work is very big in that case. Now, with respect to money, what we've seen throughout the world is that when it was the IT telecom one, it can't be hosted by government. If we look at the preceding event in Korea, it was then founded by KT, Korea Telecom. Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates were among the biggest sponsors. So you can imagine, even in a country like Korea, when this was the thing, countries outside of the Korea Peninsula were even involved in pushing money in there. So the biggest sponsor also attracted other countries to support. Now, in our case, we made it clear that government didn't have money. We would not be in a position to finance this without industry. And what we had to do was to go out and ask for industry sponsorship, where MTN came up as a platinum sponsor. Now, MTN said that we will not give you money cash. So we will not pay in kind. We prefer to give you money. And in terms of accounting requirements, that money did not come to the account of the country. It had to go to the state. So that money has to be given to Mr. Treasurer in the normal course of fiscal appropriation. Now, when that happened, we had to go back to Mr. Treasurer to ask for that money. So while that process was running, we had to put our own money, which came from our international branch. So there is no other program that was affected in terms of this project. What happened to the international branch is that they exhausted their international branch. So it came from the relevant branch that was hosting the event. Now the companies that sponsored us in kind were asked to appoint service providers. So we said that the department did not appoint service providers at all. So if Manichol said we give you for the visual equipment, Manichol had to go and procure that service from whoever the supplier is. We would receive the same. And that was to ensure that the department is not caught up in terms of the accounting issue. So that's what we will do. And very quickly on the subject roaming issue, we have been working on this in project, believing that if subject as an economic area, as a rec, regional economic community, can harmonize the roaming arrangement, it will go a long way in allowing other citizens to move carry their home. You know, when you go to another country, you don't have to get the plastic roaming when you buy a SIM card. You can always use your home. And we are looking at what other people are doing. Now, for the 6% of people who move in South Africa, come to South Africa. So we're a big recipient of people who move. So if people come, they'll move to South Africa. So we have to look at all those kind of communities. When we are now in Honorable E3 and we are looking at the cost duplication, what is the cost of doing this? So when we agree as a country to make commitment, it must be based on knowing what it will do to our economy, but also what it will do to the operators. So that is where we are in short. I will ask the DPG to deal with the departmental issues covered by the CFO, and then we can then go to the cabinet.
Thank you very much, DG, Chairperson, Member. I've noted some of the questions that DG has said the CFO and Farhat will add where I am trying to cover everything in the interest of time. There was a question, and I've grouped the questions so that the answers can cover all the questions that we posed with regards to the operations of the organization. On the issue of the mentorium, how is it affecting the department and service delivery? What has happened is that when Minister came in as the Minister, she placed the moratorium on the filling of vacancies and the reason being so that she can then be briefed on the positions that are in the pipeline, because it will not be correct that you come in today and tomorrow all positions are filled and there are no submissions. So we deal with these matters case by case. And this is happening whether it's in entities or whether it's in GCIS or DOC or DTPM. So it's case by case we prevent this type of issue. And this matter is going to be considered now at DEC, and DEC is the Departmental Executive Committee, where I have requested all the DDGs with the positions in their specific environments, which are very strategic and urgent, to be filled so that we can prepare one report to the minister to say this particular position, irrespective of the centers, we need to fill. So we are in that, we have already identified some. I just need to present the DEC so that a DEC can then take a position and take it to the minister. On the nature, how is it affecting the morale of the staff? Because of the, there is ongoing communication with the staff. Minister has met with the staff of all three departments and all 12 entities reporting to her. Minister met with the deputy minister. They went around, met with the staff to explain what the process will be. But in terms of the actual workings of the organization, we have even joint meetings with the affected departments. Our ex-cos we meet so that we can plan, take the position forward. For instance, when it comes to all the SOEs, as we may all know, that there is no DDG responsible for the SOEs at DOC. So DDG Shannon then automatically, because he is senior, is then assisting in the day-to-day running. So we are already working together. When it comes to administration, it is the same. When it comes to policy, DDG Mamisi, and so on, DDG Obeni on infrastructure and assets, dealt with DDG Mruane. So we are already working together as a team. And also, as early as yesterday, we met with the Department of Public Service and Administration to clarify certain issues in terms of the process that as an organization we need to observe moving forward. And why are we meeting with the DSA is that because the President already pronounced that DOC, DDPS, we're going to merge, unlike the other departments that we only know after the election and we start wanting to work then. We are we are at an advantage because we already know that we are going to merge with DOC, and based on that we are already starting to map the processes as to what is it that we need to do, like the process monitoring and all the things that we need to do. On ICT training, the specific training for the department, what we have done, we have called in for PDP, which is a personal development plan, and we gave those plans to the DDG to say in your crisis the type of training that the colleagues have identified. And we are going to then look at the training and then advise accordingly the type of training that is needed. And that goes in hand in hand with the skills audits that we have, we are undertaking, both in the three departments, plus in the entities, all the 12 entities, there will be a skills audit. At least I'm comforted by the fact that DBSA even yesterday said we are on the right track with the skills audit, because that information we're going to need when we start to map our way forward with the new structure and what is our mind. That document will come in handy in terms of the issues of the placement. The question was also, is there a central coordinator? The response is yes, every department and entity has a central coordinator, but DTP has to be specific. There is a director responsible for HRP, Ms. Mahonia, that is responsible for the coordination. The issue of the risk, why is it raised and why are we only talking to branches now? This report, when we planned for the stress plan, the report was very presented. But the program then changed and did not accommodate that this presentation be made. Hence, it was not made. But as we understand the process of auditing, once you say, then this is what we are going to do, if it is not done, irrespective of the fact, then it will reflect as not done. Then it was not presented, but it was there. And secondly, why are we only now taking it to branches? Because here we're talking about Q1, Q2, Q3. So we are now talking to branches so that we can have a comprehensive report which will also cover all the quarter. The training, was it a service provider or was it done internal? This training for project management was done by external service providers. We went on 3 quotations and 2 universities. It was Regenesis and VET. But yes, there was no exam. Reason being, we at the time of that particular training, we identified that we needed to have the basics. And we realized when we were doing the audit as to who has project management, that other people in the organization are already seriously advanced. They have serious project management skills. So those of us who didn't have, or those who didn't have, then went for this one. And then as we move along, now this department taking a different form and shape, we will then be able to advise colleagues that they do, you know, like the proper project management where exams will then be taken. What are the conditions if we do the training? There is a policy on training which is approved, and we know that this policy has good conditions, that if we train you now and you get that particular skill, you will not leave us. Otherwise, you have to pay back the money, or if you move to another government department, we claim the money from that particular, from that government department. So that they can, they are aware. Sorry, we do not say to government, but we make that department aware that you still a part of the holder and you must work in government for this particular period. But if you go to private sector, we then claim that particular money. So there are conditions, also conditions that if you fail, you pay back and all the rights. In terms of the establishment and the filling of vacant positions, which are those positions and when are we going to fill them? Some of them is the 2 DDG positions, which is the DDG policy and the DDG ISED, and some chief director positions. But our vacancy rate currently, we are at 2.24. Like I have said, others with ministerial strength, we advertise 2 director positions that legal is going to fill, because it's going to form part of the positions that we take on the director spectrum and other positions in the organization that we know we're going to need, irrespective of how the department is going to be. Thank you, TG. Thank you, Chair. I don't know if CFO and Farah would like to add.
I think it was covered. Just to add perhaps on the risk issue, as the DDG mentioned, the identification was done, that it was a double barrel target that sort of shot us in the foot, was identification and consideration. So the consideration should happen in terms of what is the impact and likelihood and how you can mitigate and all that. But in terms of the workshops, it, as at the end of January, there's 2 branches that are still outstanding. So based on the monthly reports, as at the end of January, so perhaps by now we can confirm if those were concluded, but it's just 2 branches that are outstanding, so therefore we have moved in terms of catching up on that. And then the outputs of all of the branch workshops will then come through the management structures and the listing links committee for approval and adoption. And then maybe just to touch on the 4-hour commission issue, I think we do plan on informed assumptions, and the assumption was that by Q1, which is expected, by Q1, we should have facilitated the establishment of the commission. That's facilitated because it aligned with the presidency, but that took a bit longer, which had a knock-on effect. And unfortunately, that's why we couldn't move further on the support.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I think there was a question on slide 34 on the action plan, that there were these disciplinary cases that we consumer management that happened on people who did not submit their performance agreement. However, there's no consumer management on the finding that where the official captured did not capture correctly. In fact, the impact, we looked at the impact that was made on the financials and also on the audit report, because under assessment, those findings impact on the compliance. And one is on compliance, therefore it means you cannot get a clean audit. However, on the capturing of transactions, those findings are only control findings, and where AG just emphasized that we need to put more controls. But that has been done. However, the training that the official needs to undertake can only be provided by National Treasury because it's on the score classification. How do you classify a transaction if they happen? So otherwise, I think the DG has answered more questions. And also there was a question on the IT, whether the card that were the reduction from the baseline were moved to fund the ITU. No, those cuts are cabinet reductions and they are mainly done by National Treasury. So it doesn't mean that the department took money to fund the ITU. Thank you.
If the department engaged with the Office of the Auditor General to determine that the controls that they have implemented are the right controls, that you engage with the AG therefore, so that we don't have a return message, when we receive another audit that no, we didn't put in place the right controls. Just carry on about that.
Okay, usually for AG starts with the audit, they do, during their planning, these are the things that they follow up on. So they look at the previous findings, how did we move. So what we do, we also send them the progress on the findings, and then we sit and discuss. We do have the steering committee that sits depending, in fact, this is on a monthly basis. Just to address such things, the engagement level and all that. So, and also we also have the these findings also presented at the audit committee, and now I've lost it. Thank
you. Okay, any afternoon as well?
Thanks, Chairperson. Start with, I think there are two questions directed at Susanna. Honorable Singh, let me simplify this one and for all. The Susanna project is in terms of the EPA, and the subsidy the private sector to roll out infrastructure. And then we subsidize resulting to two service level agreements. The one service level agreement for infrastructure. After signing off, you then pay for that rollout. And then the service level agreement for connectivity, which you only pay connectivity based on connectivity effort. It is impossible to pay for something that does not exist. I hope this once and for all clarifies the matter. The reality then becomes the challenges in the sector of connectivity. So you have the infrastructure, the network is there. But for connectivity, you may be affected negatively by electricity challenges, the landscape, the weather, and so forth, and as a result, out of assigned, for example, 295 sites, because those are very rural areas, it's not like sentence, like, so the electricity challenges are there, and the weather challenges are there. You then maybe have 100 and something sites connected in a particular month. you then only pay for those connected sites, not the 295 that is signed off. So that's how we manage it. And therefore, it's impossible to pay for nothing. That's the assurance I would give. Yes, of course, there were delays in collecting the 609 sites in our town. As a result of all the challenges that took place in the financial year, only 295 sites were activated, of which in a particular month you have 100 and something on, sorry, not on, but used as a result of maybe weather or electricity or whatever other challenges. The last question, Honorable Killian, the comfort, I think DJ has covered it partly. The comfort could be that, of course, we are focused now. Governance-wise, we've got an interim board. We need stability there so that we could have then a board that could take us forward. But we are still implementing the recommendations of the public protector. So instability that are as a result of that implementation do arise. But we're hoping that once we conclude and close that chapter, there will be stability and focus, and we will see more improvement in terms of the performance. Of course, Honorable Mackenzie, the changes that we envisaging, either in terms of DDF or whatever policy changes, they do create some discomfort with our employees. And we're trying to manage that in the sense that, of course, those changes will be affected by change of law. So at this stage, there are intentions until the law is changed, and then we'll have to implement the law, which I assume it will provide transitional period that will then manage and all those uncertainties. Thank you.
Other
question?
Don't have any questions?
No. Thank you, Sintonia. I do really understand your financing model, so thank you for that, you know, 101 explanation. You have 7 pages of underachieved targets relating to connectivity in your site. Surely that is a failure of either procurement or management. You know, we all have that life in some, but one of the things, a tremendous amount of money is being spent at, you know, fixing wires to buildings. And then there is nothing that's coming out the wires at the other end. So that is a huge failure, as far as I understand. I mean, 7 pages of it.
Through your chair, the chair, Honorable Masang, will give the link to this in terms of how audit operates, where you would have an audit finding that says non-achieved, not because nothing has happened, but because if it was supposed to show 10 and showing 9, the conclusion is non-achieved in terms of audit. That's what we are saying. In our next APT, because we've learned the lesson, we are now redefining how we measure the performance. Because for as long as we measure it in the current form, where you have 295 sites and you have 294 connected in a particular quarter, but the audit finding will stay non-achieved, because it's not 295. So that's the function of how we captured our target. And that's what we refer to in the report. And with that lesson, we are changing how we define it so that it becomes that reasonability. So if you have achieved 90-something percent, and you should set your target to what is a reasonable percentage of productivity in a rural area like Mbenyan. Can you achieve 100%? Impossible. So what is the reasonable percentage? So we'll set that as the target so that we are able to then report accurately.
That's all?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the question, Honourable Members. I think let me start also by clearing these percentages. The World default standard for delivery is 92% within the defined standard delivery period. So if we're not delivering 100% of those, it doesn't mean the rest is never delivered, it's just not delivered on time. Now let me give you some numbers. So we process 2.8 million articles of post a day, and we do that primarily manually because for the last 20 years we haven't spent anything on technology. If we were to achieve the world standard of 92%, that would leave 225,000 articles of post a day unprocessed on time. If 10% of those people were to complain about it, we'd get 22,000 complaints a day. So the numbers are overwhelming, and I understand that 100% is the only acceptable outcome, although I do feel sorry for whoever you judge for not getting the last 24% at school. But let me just say that the backlog, it's been very well discussed, and there will forever be isolated instances of delayed postal delivery. The numbers are just too overwhelming. It happens throughout the world. We will never achieve 100% on-time delivery, Your Honour. I just want to somewhat whimsically, if you like, respond to the broadband experiment posting four letters and just say in our defence that Business Insider took it upon themselves to do a likewise objective test, and they posted 25 chocolate eggs through courier companies. They sent them through Aramex, Taxi, Postnet, 3-in-1, DHL and Sopa. SOPA beat all of those couriers hands down. We delivered 30% faster than anybody with about 80% of the cost and about half as many breakages. So we beat every single courier company in South Africa. So there are some positives amongst those things or negatives that you focus on. But let me just say, I think automation has to be part of the solution of getting to 100% or getting closer. We have engaged as recently as 2 weeks ago with the UPU to switch on the engines of the automated systems that they supply to us at Joburg International, which have been lying dormant for the last decade. And the COO went over to the UPU to discuss the various of their aid problems, and I think for the first time they're starting to take us seriously. But, we cannot cope with a manual system that deals with this volume of posts. And so you're right, Honourable McKenzie, that we've got to switch on the machines, and that will come. I take on board, and I'm embarrassed about the number of post offices that are closed. Let me just say this, our creditors were only settled 2 weeks ago. We settled 744 million of creditors when we received the 2.9 billion capital injection. So I think a lot of the branch closures that you would have come across have now been dealt with, but yes, they were only dealt with 2 weeks ago. And so, again, apologies for that. Let me just talk, as far as you asked on November about the cleanliness, I sent out a personal, what we call an in-touch message about cleanliness in the post office. In January, I walked around mail centres personally, and wherever I go into the branches locally, personally. And you asked, dirty. I'm sorry. And the trouble is that a dirty post office eventually translates into dirty employees and dirty attitudes, and we are sending out, we have 3 weeks ago, unprompted, sent out a memo to clean, physically clean our post office. I'm sorry for the state there at the moment, but we know it and we're fixing it. Let me talk about the SASA, the question that came out of SASA. Before that, Honourable McKenzie, you mentioned things that we're doing in terms of our license agreement. It remains a problem to me that our licensor still allows illegal operation of things of competitors, so-called competitors like Postnet. And let me say that we beat Postnet in that courier exercise, hands down. And just to give you the numbers, it cost 90 rand to post those eggs at Postnet, it cost 82 rand and 75 at software. They took 23 hours and 32 minutes to deliver, we took 17 hours and 4 minutes. 46% of the eggs were broken in the Postnet delivery, 25% in software. So Postnet needs to be shut down. It's illegal, and for the first time, we find that they're responding to the affidavits that we've submitted to the license authorities in that regard. So, as big an opportunity as that is, it comes with extraordinary challenges. Let me say this, that I haven't quantified, but the amount of money we save government and beneficiaries runs into billions per annum as a result of this coming into the state. But we have become the target for all technological and other cash-stealing schemes in the country. We fight it on a daily basis. I've got a 24-hour WhatsApp called the SASA War Room, and we monitor these things. But in the normal course of events, and if you want to look at the crime statistics of financial fraud around South Africa, you will find that the post office is not unique in this. The technology fraudulent capabilities, we actually have a delegation going to China shortly to where the cards are actually manufactured to check the resilience of the firewalls, if you like, that are put into place. I mean, we've had people. One of the things I should warn you all against is this new thing of tapping to get things approved creates extraordinary fraud opportunities because they can mess with the machine, not the card. The card is usually very resilient. It's the machine that the local entity that we had a SASA beneficiary doing 80 with purchases at a Puma sports outfit. And they do them below 80 rand so that they're not detected by the system. And there are sophisticated fraud syndicates working. We are also working to beat them. But again, I don't expect 100% track record on fraud and theft. And I can only say we're very close to working with the police and with our own internal entities. And we catch fraud very quickly. The biggest accumulated fraud that I've been made aware of so far in SASA amounted to a total of funds of 1.6 million. Considering that we distribute 180 billion rand a year, that is, I would argue, an acceptable if unexpected figure of fraudulent activity. But I promise you, we're on it 24 hours a day. So again, and also let me tell you, at least no one's legally stealing money from the beneficiaries anymore. On SASA, I'll get to the profitability in a second. It's an extraordinarily successful government initiative, never mind the post office. It's an extraordinarily successful taking of ownership of something that was previously not inside our control. I'm really proud of it, actually. As far as government uptake on other initiatives, I'm overwhelmed, to be frank, about the number of approaches we're getting from government. We're in deep discussions with MESFAS, because that grant payment system is exactly the same as the grant payment system that we've developed. We have had already discussions with the new guy there, Randall Carrollson, who's a very smart guy. I've met with all of the presidents of the SRCs. We are going to roll out payment of student grants, but they've got their own challenges, as you know, right now. But we've met with all of the operators there. I'm just trying to wrap up quickly. Menlo Park, undeserved apology, I'm sorry. I haven't chased that up. It's a disgrace. I've sent out four messages since you asked me the question. We'll find it. We'll sort it out. I don't think it's quite the drug trafficking center that you suggested it might be. There's a sponsor shop that's operating at our back door. I'll get on it. I'll get on it personally. It'll be solved in a week. Where's SAPO going? And you asked about the profitability. Our three-year plan shows us to be profitable before the receipt of the public service mandate monies in the financial year 2021. And it shows us to be, I'm expecting, it's difficult to put numbers, but our forecast, just because it's a formal document, our forecast shows software overall profitability to the tune of about 850 million in the 21-22 financial year. And I'm happy to share our SDP and the basis of all of those calculations with you. So, I'm expecting that within my term of office, we will have a post office that is profitable for the two final years before the allocation of the public service mandate. Where are we now? For the first time, we have cash available for actual capital expenditure. And so we've got no borrowings from any banks. And so the interest burden has gone away. We still have high overhead costs. and we have expenditure on SASA, which we think is well worth it. So for example, I think we spent something like 250 million on cards. That's reflected as an expense, but it's actually an investment in stock. And so if you start looking at the profitability forecast for Post Bank over the next 2 years, it's extraordinary. I'm looking at revenue 1.5 billion inside Post Bank next year. And that's, you know, currently a division under restructuring at the moment, but that's all part of the group and that is all part of the strategy. So I would say this, I would say we've about got to ground level in the turnaround strategy of the business. I would say we are in the hole, but we're not flying in the sky. It takes much longer than you think, and we are now, personally, I am now building the management team that will take over. When I leave, it takes 18 months to build a management team. We've decentralized all of the management decisions so that people on the ground are enabled and making decisions. And, you know, I think that I don't think we're going to ever come back for money. If you want to call that. I think it takes longer than you think. And the dynamics of investment are now challenging the worldwide post offices overall. I was in a meeting with the DG of the UPU yesterday, the deputy DG. The USA is looking to pull out of the UPU because they don't agree with the way China prices the destination tariffs. There are massive challenges for post around the world to compete in the digital world for everybody. But I think I've never felt better about the post office, but then I did start off with a very low base. Thank you.
Members, could I just respond to some of the questions? If I understood the first question correctly, it was around a statement that the CEO has reviewed the operating model, if I believe it was around that. I'm not certain whether I understood that question correctly. We had to re-look at our operating model because of really extensive changes that happened in doing research in the past 2 years. That was done at the operational level. In fact, that issue was received the attention of the board a few weeks ago and it was approved. On the NISA, again, the question was about the awareness campaigns. We have not embarked on a national awareness campaign approach. We try to keep our awareness campaigns are relatively low-key, but related to events in certain areas. Take, for example, an ICT forum, I think it was called an ICT development summit in the Eastern Cape. Typically, our people from the marketing division would come in, and other people jointly with a person from the CoLab, so jointly from Central NAMESA and from the local CoLab, there would be an event stage to engage people, pupils visiting that event, for example, to get them involved, to create awareness, and to get them to follow learning programs offered by NAMESA, in that case, for example, by the local CoLab. How do we assess the impact? The impact until now has been assessed in terms of the uptake and the people coming for training afterwards. We know that is on our deal. You should actually say how many people could have come and how many did in fact turn up. So we know that methodology is not the ideal one. We have discussed intensively ways of looking at broader awareness campaigns and also ways of ensuring that we can determine the impact of those awareness campaigns. But that is for the movement forward. There was a question on the core training from and it was a question about the sad situation that one had a delay in the training because agreements were not signed. Firstly, a part of this relates to the one-year agreement situation. So every year that agreement has to be signed, and of course signing it on the side of the NISA is one thing, but it goes to the legal office at the university. If anything is found, it comes back to the NISA. And it becomes quite a process to get the MOA to the point of being signed, especially if that process is not started long enough in advance.
earlier for the current financial year, much earlier in the year than the previous year when it was a bit of a disaster. Some of the agreements only being signed in September, which was unacceptable. We've improved on that, but most important is that with the three-year memorandum of agreement, we will be moving out of that problem fully. Why was only one group involved? Because the typical digital literacy training is done by the CoLab with local trainers or by small local intermediaries that can become involved at short notice. The ICT practitioners typically are that agreements have to be made with trainers, and that those agreements can be done only once the money is available at the universities. Some universities only allow for agreements to be made once the money has physically arrived, the first tranche. So that was the background, but I think it is a part of history. We have created a situation where we have definitely moved out of late agreements that will impact negatively upon training to be delivered.
Do we still have the same questions? Answer.
Chair, I just wanted another 20 seconds to respond to Mr. McKenzie's point, which I've now got feedback on.
Okay.
So I just want to inform Honourable McKenzie that the Chief Operating Officer is in her car on the way to Menlo Park with a risk combat team as we speak. There are no authorities supporting what's going on there. It's not even gone to the property division, so it looks like we have a road postmaster, and we'll deal with it. Thank you.
Court, sir, you are the last. 10 seconds.
Okay. There were two questions, one from Honourable McKenzie about the impact of the stock rationalization process on morale. So far, no impact, and that's primarily because we give employees regular updates when there is something to communicate on the progress of the stock rationalization process. The second question from Honourable Kian was regarding our report on page 3 about budgeted revenue that was for the first quarter materializing only in the second quarter. The reason for that is when we were doing the budget for the current financial year, we finished around December 2017. At that time, we were expecting the go-ahead for the commencement of SA Connect to be given to us by DCTS early in January. It only was issued to us early in March. So then that caused a delay of about a quarter in our revenue actual versus the plan. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. I guess this should bring us to the end of our meeting. But just as a comment, earlier on, Madam Shin, when you asked a question about the ITU conference and what your view, she actually asked a question whether it was actually necessary to host that event and use taxpayer money. Now, I know that Nigeria has a tendency to write those as queries that members have raised. But I think the fact of the matter is that there were members that were all invited, like the department, and I attended, and a few other members. It was one of the well-organized events I've ever come across, organized by government. But the good and the DG did not give his response. He did deal with some of the forward-looking values that derived out of ITU. When I went there, one of the things that was a problem in my mind is whether our young people will embrace the fourth industrial revolution, whether they were ready to be part of this unfolding future. And I was fascinated by the numbers that we had, coming up with new innovation, new technologies, and what did you want to do. And because I had a few business cards, I shared with some of them my business card, and it's fascinating how they are updating me about where they are going and so on. So it was, I'm more than the big boys and girls that are playing in that field. For me, the participation of the students from universities, young and upcoming, what do you call, entrepreneurs, and the, but also part of people, actually I just felt they should have opened that thing even for more universities across the country. It would have derived even much more pain. So from our side, given another opportunity to host another event of the magnitude, by all means, go ahead and bring more young staff into the field. I'm just saying, I just want to balance the question. Madam Chair?
Chair, my concern about the conference was that the taxpayers' money, 11.5 million rand, has been spent on this event when the minister promised that no taxpayer money would be spent on it. So it's a failure of the department to raise the necessary sponsorship.
Well, I'm not quitting you, really. And I am not reflecting on the correctness or none of it of the budget use. All I am speaking to is what derived in that event for the people. And if it costs anything, and I want to commend Cabinet, NCN, they were facing all these big problems of UPNOC. They were able to, and they saw the value of investing. And I think it was a mistake that they invested in such an investment, which is quite appreciated, the money that expected even others could possibly invest in such initiatives. That's what is starting to teach the lesson that you may have learned, that if there are such events coming, calculate your risk and put a few cents to it so that you cushion the query that Madam Shin will raise. Remember, Madam Shin is coming back as a member of parliament, and Mina and some of us to defend that you may not also come back. Madam Shin, I have another meeting, so I give you 15 seconds.
Just wanted to know, in the current budget and tomorrow's budget, whether the international affairs budget for the next year has been cut by 11.5 billion, seeing you could actually suspend it so easily without affecting
the Madam Shin, out of order. No. I think for us as a committee, we must it has been very helpful for the future parliament that they do not deal with our baggage. They'll only be left with the last fourth quarter of this year, and I think we have not left them a package for them to deal with the first, which I know most committees have not been able to catch up. And from our side, thank you for having spent a quality time with yourselves. For those, I don't know whether all members will come back here. If they will, I guess they will continue to fly the flag of the committee. Myanmar. Of the committee, and we also hope that for the future parliament, you will do appropriate handovers, give them the necessary respect that you have given to this committee. And we wish you well. And for those that I promised to visit, I will still visit before the end of our term, even if we are like 2 weeks ago. But thank you very much, Mrs. President.
Thank you.